But you're valuable to me. Come north. Meet Alcinous. Juno can play her little games with Greeks and Romans, but in the end, you will be my pawn. You will be the key to the gods' defeat.
Percy's vision turned dark. He stood in a theater-sized version of the camp's headquarters, a principia with walls of ice and freezing mist hanging in the air. The floor was littered with skeletons in Roman armor and imperial gold weapons encrusted with frost. In the back of the room sat an enormous shadowy figure. His skin glinted of gold and silver, as if he were an automaton like Reyna's dogs. Behind him stood a collection of ruined emblems, tattered banners, and a large golden eagle on a staff of iron. The giant's voice boomed in the vast chamber.
"This will be fun, son of Neptune. It's been eons since I broke a demigod of your caliber. I await you atop the ice."
Percy woke, shivering. For a moment he didn't know where he was. Then he remembered. Camp Jupiter, the 5th Cohort Barracks. He lay in his bunk, staring at the ceiling and trying to control his racing heartbeat. A golden giant was waiting to break him. Wonderful. But what unnerved him more was that sleeping woman's face in the hills.
"You will be my pawn."
Percy didn't play chess, but he was pretty sure that being a pawn was bad. They died a lot. Even the friendlier parts of his dream were disturbing. A fawn named Grover was looking for him. Maybe that's why Don had detected a, what had he called it? An empathy link. Somebody named Tyson was searching for him, too, and Annabeth had warned Percy to stay where he was. He sat up in his bunk. His roommates were rushing around, getting dressed and brushing their teeth. Dakota was wrapping himself in a long piece of red-speckled cloth, a toga. One of the Larrys was giving him pointers on where to tuck and fold.
"Breakfast time?" Percy asked hopefully.
Frank's head popped up from the bunk below. He had bags under his eyes like he hadn't slept well.
"A quick breakfast. Then we've got the Senate meeting."
Dakota's head was stuck in his toga. He staggered around like a Kool-Aid-stained ghost.
Percy said. "Should I wear my bedsheets?"
Frank snorted.
"That's just for the senators. There are 10 of them, elected yearly. You've got to be at camp 5 years to qualify."
"So how come we're invited to the meeting?"
"Because, you know, the quest."
Frank sounded worried, like he was afraid Percy would back out.
"We have to be in on the discussion. You, me, Hazel. I mean, if you're willing."
Frank probably didn't mean to guilt him, but Percy's heart felt pulled like taffy. He had sympathy for Frank. Getting claimed by the war god in front of the whole camp, what a nightmare. Plus, how could Percy say no to that big, pouty baby face? Frank had been given a huge task that would most likely get him killed. He was scared. He needed Percy's help. And the three of them had made a good team last night. Hazel and Frank were solid, dependable people. They'd accepted Percy like family. Still, he didn't like the idea of this quest, especially since it came from Mars and especially after his dreams.
I'd better get ready.
He climbed out of bed and got dressed. The whole time he thought about Annabeth. Help was on the way. He could have his old life back. All he had to do was stay put. At breakfast, Percy was conscious of everyone looking at him. They were whispering about the previous night.
Two gods in one day. Un-Roman fighting. Water cannon up my nose.
He was too hungry to care. He filled up on pancakes, eggs, bacon, waffles, apples, and several glasses of orange juice. He probably would have eaten more, but Reyna announced that the Senate would now convene in the city, and all the folks in togas got up to leave.
"Here we go."
Hazel fidgeted with a stone that looked like a 2-carat ruby. The ghost Vitellius appeared next to them in a purple shimmer.
"Bona fortuna, you three."
"Ah, Senate meetings. I remember the one when Caesar was assassinated. Why, the amount of blood on his toga."
"Thanks, Vitellius," Frank interrupted. "We should get going."
Reyna and Octavian led the procession of senators out of camp, with Reyna's metal greyhounds dashing back and forth along the road. Hazel, Frank, and Percy trailed behind. Percy noticed Nico D'Angelo in the group wearing a black toga and talking with Gwen, who looked a little pale but surprisingly good considering she'd been dead the night before. Nico waved at Percy, then went back to his conversation, leaving Percy more sure than ever that Hazel's brother was trying to avoid him. Dakota stumbled along in his red speckled robe. A lot of other senators seemed to be having trouble with their togas, too, hiking up their hems, trying to keep the cloth from slipping off their shoulders. Percy was glad he was wearing a regular purple t-shirt and jeans.
How could Romans move in those things? He wondered.
They were just for formal occasions, Hazel said, like tuxedos. I bet the ancient Romans hated togas as much as we do. By the way, you didn't bring any weapons, did you?
Percy's hand went to his pocket, where his pen always stayed.
Why? Are we not supposed to?
No weapons allowed inside the Pomerian line, she said.
The what line?
Pomerian, Frank said. The city limits. Inside is a sacred safe zone. Legions can't march through. No weapons allowed. That's so Senate meetings don't get bloody.
Like Julius Caesar getting assassinated? Percy asked.
Frank nodded.
Don't worry. Nothing like that has happened in months.
Percy hoped he was kidding. As they got closer to the city, Percy could appreciate how beautiful it was. The tiled roofs and gold domes gleamed in the sun. Gardens bloomed with honeysuckle and roses. The central plaza was paved in white and gray stone, decorated with statues, fountains, and gilded columns. In the surrounding neighborhoods, cobblestone streets were lined with freshly painted townhouses, shops, cafes, and parks. In the distance rose the Colosseum and the horse racing arena. Percy didn't notice they'd reached the city limits until the senators in front of him started slowing down. On the side of the road stood a white marble statue, a life-size muscular man with curly hair, no arms, and an irritated expression. Maybe he looked mad because he'd been carved only from the waist up. Below that, he was just a big block of marble.
"Single file, please," the statue said. "Have your IDs ready."
Percy looked to his left and right. He hadn't noticed before, but a line of identical statues ringed the city at intervals of about 100 yards. The senators passed through easily. The statue checked the tattoos on their forearms and called each senator by name.
"Gwendolyn, Senator, 5th cohort, yes. Nico D'Angelo, Ambassador of Pluto, very well. Reyna, Praetor, of course. Hank, Senator, 3rd cohort. Oh, nice shoes, Hank. Ah, who have we here?"
Hazel, Frank, and Percy were the last ones.
"Terminus," Hazel said. "This is Percy Jackson. Percy, this is Terminus, the god of boundaries."
"New, eh?" said the god. "Yes, Probatio tablet. Fine. Weapon in your pocket? Take it out, take it out."
Percy didn't know how Terminus could tell, but he took out his pen.
"Quite dangerous," Terminus said. "Leave it in the tray. Wait. Where's my assistant? Julia!"
A little girl about 6 years old peeked out from behind the base of the statue. She had pigtails, a pink dress, and an impish grin with 2 missing teeth.
"Julia?"
Terminus glanced behind him, and Julia scurried in the other direction.
"Where did that girl go?"
Terminus looked the other way and caught sight of Julia before she could hide. The little girl squealed with delight.
"Oh, there you are," said the statue. "Front and center. Bring the tray."
Julia scrambled out and brushed off her dress. She picked up a tray and presented it to Percy. On it were several paring knives, a corkscrew, an oversized container of sun lotion, and a water bottle.
"You could pick up your weapon on the way out," Terminus said. "Julia will take good care of it. She's a trained professional."
The little girl nodded.
"Professional."
She said each syllable carefully, like she'd been practicing. Percy glanced at Hazel and Frank, who didn't seem to find anything odd about this. Still, he wasn't wild about handing over a deadly weapon to a kid.
"The thing is," he said, "the pen returns to my pocket automatically. So even if I give it up..."
"Not to worry," Terminus assured him. "We'll make sure it doesn't wander off. Won't we, Julia?"
Yes, Mr. Terminus.
Reluctantly, Percy put his pen on the tray.
Now, a few rules, since you're new, Terminus said. You are entering the boundaries of the city proper. Keep the peace inside the line. Yield to chariot traffic while walking on public roads. When you get to the Senate House, sit on the left-hand side, and, down there, do you see where I'm pointing?
Percy said, you don't have any hands. Apparently this was a sore point for Terminus. His marble face turned a dark shade of gray.
A smart aleck, eh? Well, Mr. Rule Flouter, right down there in the forum. Julia, point for me, please.
Julia dutifully set down the security tray and pointed toward the main plaza.
The shop with the blue awning, Terminus continued. That's the general store. They sell tape measures. Buy one. I want those pants exactly 1 inch above the ankles, and that hair regulation cut. And tuck your shirt in.
Hazel said, Thank you, Terminus. We need to get going.
Fine, fine. You may pass, the god said testily. But stay on the right side of the road. And that rock right there. No, Hazel, look where I'm pointing. That rock is entirely too close to that tree. Move it 2 inches to the left.
Hazel did what she was told, and they continued down the path. Terminus still shouting orders at them while Julia did cartwheels across the grass.
Is he always like that? Percy asked.
No, Hazel admitted. Today he was laid back. Usually he's more obsessive-compulsive.
He inhabits every boundary stone around the city, Frank said. Kind of our last line of defense if the city's attacked.
Terminus isn't so bad, Hazel added. Just don't make him angry, or he'll force you to measure every blade of grass in the valley.
Percy filed that information. And the kid? Julia? Hazel grinned.
Yeah, she's a cutie. Her parents live in the city. Come on, we better catch up to the senators.
As they approached the forum, Percy was struck by the sheer number of people. College-age kids were hanging out at the fountain. Several of them waved at the senators as they passed. One guy in his late 20s stood at a bakery counter, flirting with a young woman who was buying coffee. An older couple was watching a little boy in diapers and a miniature Camp Jupiter shirt toddle after seagulls. Merchants were opening their shops for the day, putting out signs in Latin that advertised pottery, jewelry, and half-price tickets for the Hippodrome.
All these people are demigods? Percy asked. Or descended from demigods, Hazel said. Like I told you, it's a good place to go to college or raise a family without worrying about monster attacks every day. Maybe 200-300 people live here. The veterans act as, like, advisors and reserve forces as needed, but mostly they're just citizens living their lives.
Percy imagined what that would be like, getting an apartment in this tiny replica of Rome, protected by the Legion and Terminus, the OCD border god. He imagined holding hands with Annabeth at a cafe. Maybe when they were older, watching their own kid chase seagulls across the forum. He shook the idea out of his head. He couldn't afford to indulge in that kind of thinking. Most of his memories were gone, but he knew this place wasn't his home. He belonged somewhere else, with his other friends. Besides, Camp Jupiter was in danger. If Juno was right, an attack was coming in less than 5 days. Percy imagined that sleeping woman's face, the face of Gia, forming in the hills above camp. He imagined hordes of monsters descending into this valley.
If you don't succeed, Mars had warned, there won't be any camp left to return to. Rome will be overrun, its legacy lost forever.
He thought about the little girl Julia, the families with kids, his new friends in the fifth cohort, even those silly fawns. He didn't want to picture what might happen to them if this place was destroyed. The senators made their way to a big, white-domed building on the west end of the forum. Percy paused at the doorway, trying not to think about Julius Caesar getting slashed to death at a Senate meeting. Then he took a deep breath and followed Hazel and Frank inside. Chapter 14 Percy The Senate House interior looked like a high school lecture hall. A semicircle of tiered seats faced a dais with a podium and two chairs. The chairs were empty, but one had a small velvet package on the seat. Percy, Hazel, and Frank sat on the left side of the semicircle. The 10 senators and Nico D'Angelo occupied the rest of the front row. The upper rows were filled with several dozen ghosts and a few older veterans from the city, all in formal togas. Octavian stood in front with a knife and a beanie baby lion, just in case anyone needed to consult the god of cutesy collectibles. Reyna walked to the podium and raised her hand for attention.
"Right, this is an emergency meeting," she said. "We won't stand on formalities."
"I love formalities," a ghost complained.
Reyna shot him a cross look.
"First of all," she said, "we're not here to vote on the quest itself. The quest has been issued by Mars Ulter, patron of Rome. We will obey his wishes. Nor are we here to debate the choice of Frank Jong's companions."
"All three from the fifth cohort?" called out Hank from the third. "That's not fair."
"And not smart," said the boy next to him. "We know the fifth will mess up. They should take somebody good."
Dakota got up so fast he spilled Kool-Aid from his flask.
"We were plenty good last night when we whipped your podix, Larry."
"Enough, Dakota," Reyna said. "Let's leave Larry's podix out of this. As quest leader, Frank has the right to choose his companions. He has chosen Percy Jackson and Hazel Levesque."
A ghost from the second row yelled,
"Of service! Frank Jong isn't even a full member of the Legion. He's on probatio. A quest must be led by someone of centurion rank or higher. This is completely..."
"Cato," Reyna snapped. "We must obey the wishes of Mars Ulter. That means certain adjustments."
Reyna clapped her hands and Octavian came forward. He set down his knife and beanie baby and took the velvet package from the chair.
"Frank Jong," he said. "Come forward."
Frank glanced nervously at Percy. Then he got to his feet and approached the auger.
"It is my pleasure," Octavian said, forcing out the last word, "to bestow upon you the mural crown for being first over the walls in siege warfare."
Octavian handed him a bronze badge shaped like a laurel wreath.
"Also, by order of Praetor Reyna, to promote you to the rank of centurion."
He handed Frank another badge, a bronze crescent, and the Senate exploded in protest.
"He's still a probie," one yelled.
"Impossible," said another.
"Water cannon up my nose," yelled a third.
"Silence!"
Octavian's voice sounded a lot more commanding than it had the previous night on the battlefield.
"Our praetor recognizes that not one below the rank of centurion may lead a quest. For good or ill, Frank must lead this quest. So our praetor has decreed that Frank Jong must be made centurion."
Suddenly, Percy understood what an effective speaker Octavian was. He sounded reasonable and supportive, but his expression was pained. He carefully crafted his words to put all the responsibility on Reyna. This was her idea, he seemed to say. If it went wrong, Reyna was to blame. If only Octavian had been the one in charge, things would have been done more sensibly. But alas, he had no choice but to support Reyna, because Octavian was a loyal Roman soldier. Octavian managed to convey all that without saying it, simultaneously calming the Senate and sympathizing with them. For the first time, Percy realized this scrawny, funny-looking scarecrow of a kid might be a dangerous enemy. Reyna must have recognized this, too. A look of irritation flashed across her face.
"There is an opening for Centurion," she said. "One of our officers, also a senator, has decided to step down. After 10 years in the Legion, she will retire to the city and attend college. Gwen, of the fifth cohort, we thank you for your service."
Everyone turned to Gwen, who managed a brave smile. She looked tired from the previous night's ordeal, but also relieved. Percy couldn't blame her. Compared to getting skewered with a pilum, college sounded pretty good.
"As praetor," Reyna continued, "I have the right to replace officers. I admit it's unusual for Camper on probatio to rise directly to the rank of centurion, but I think we can agree last night was unusual. Frank Jong, your ID, please. Frank removed the lead tablet from around his neck and handed it to Octavian.
Your arm, Octavian said.
Frank held up his forearm. Octavian raised his hand to the heavens.
We accept Frank Jong, son of Mars, to the 12th Legion Fulminata for his first year of service. Do you pledge your life to the Senate and people of Rome?
Frank muttered something like,
Dud.
Then he cleared his throat and managed,
I do.
The senator shouted,
Senatus populusque Romanus.
Fire blazed on Frank's arm. For a moment his eyes filled with terror, and Percy was afraid his friend might pass out. Then the smoke and flame died, and new marks were seared onto Frank's skin. S-P-Q-R. An image of crossed spears and a single stripe, representing the first year of service.
You may sit down.
Octavian glanced at the audience as if to say, This wasn't my idea, folks. Now, Raina said, we must discuss the quest. The senators shifted and muttered as Frank returned to his seat.
Did it hurt?
Percy whispered. Frank looked at his forearm, which was still steaming.
Yeah, a lot.
He seemed mystified by the badge in his hand, the centurion's mark, and the mural crown, like he wasn't sure what to do with them.
Here.
Hazel's eyes shone with pride.
Let me.
She pinned the medals to Frank's shirt. Percy smiled. He'd only known Frank for a day, but he felt proud of him, too.
You deserve it, man, he said. What you did last night? Natural leadership.
Frank scowled.
But Centurion.
Centurion Jong, called Octavian. Did you hear the question?
Frank blinked. Sorry, what? Octavian turned to the Senate and smirked, like, what did I tell you?
I was asking,
Octavian said, like he was talking to a 3-year-old,
if you have a plan for the quest. Do you even know where you are going?
Hazel put her hand on Frank's shoulder and stood.
Weren't you listening last night, Octavian? Mars was pretty clear. We're going to the land beyond the gods. Alaska.
The senators squirmed in their togas. Some of the ghosts shimmered and disappeared. Even Raina's metal dogs rolled over on their backs and whimpered. Finally, Senator Larry stood.
I know what Mars said, but that's crazy. Alaska is cursed. They call it the land beyond the gods for a reason. It's so far north, the Roman gods have no power there. The place is swarming with monsters. No demigod has come back from there alive since...
Since you lost your eagle, Percy said.
Larry was so startled he fell back on his podix.
Look, Percy continued.
I know I'm new here. I know you guys don't like to mention that massacre in the 1980s.
He mentioned it,
one of the ghosts whimpered.
But don't you get it?
Percy continued.
The 5th cohort led that expedition. We failed, and we have to be responsible for making things right. That's why Mars is sending us. This giant, the son of Gia, he's the one who defeated your forces 30 years ago. I'm sure of it. Now he's sitting up there in Alaska with a chained death god and all your old equipment. He's mustering his armies and sending them south to attack this camp.
Really?
Octavian said.
You seem to know a lot about our enemy's plans, Percy Jackson.
Most insults Percy could shrug off, being called weak or stupid or whatever. But it dawned on him that Octavian was calling him a spy, a traitor. That was such a foreign concept to Percy, so not who he was. He almost couldn't process the slur. When he did, his shoulders tensed. He was tempted to smack Octavian on the head again, but he realized Octavian was baiting him, trying to make him look unstable. Percy took a deep breath.
We're going to confront this son of Gia, he said, managing to keep his composure. We'll get back your eagle and unchain this god.
He glanced at Hazel.
Thanatos, right?
She nodded.
Letus in Roman, but his old Greek name is Thanatos. When it comes to death, we're happy to let him stay Greek.
Octavian sighed in exasperation. Well, whatever you call him, how do you expect to do all this and get back by the Feast of Fortuna? That's the evening of the 24th. It's the 20th now. Do you even know where to look? Do you even know who this son of Gia is?
Yes, Hazel spoke with such certainty that even Percy was surprised. I don't know exactly where to look, but I have a pretty good idea. The giant's name is Alcyoneus.
That name seemed to lower the temperature in the room by 50 degrees. The senator shivered. Raina gripped her podium.
How do you know this, Hazel? Because you're a child of Pluto?
Nico D'Angelo had been so quiet, Percy had almost forgotten he was there. Now he stood in his black toga.
Preter, if I may, he said. Hazel and I, we learned a little about the giants from our father. Each giant was bred specifically to oppose one of the 12 Olympian gods, to usurp that god's domain. The king of giants was Porphyrion, the anti-Jupiter, but the eldest giant was Alcyoneus. He was born to oppose Pluto. That's why we know of him in particular.
Raina frowned. Indeed, you sound quite familiar with him. Nico picked at the edge of his toga. Anyway, the giants were hard to kill. According to prophecy, they could only be defeated by gods and demigods working together.
Dakota belched. Sorry, did you say gods and demigods? Like, fighting side by side? That could never happen.
It has happened, Nico said. In the first giant war, the gods called on heroes to join them, and they were victorious. Whether it could happen again, I don't know. But with Alcyoneus, he was different. He was completely immortal, impossible to kill by god or demigod, as long as he remained in his home territory, the place where he was born. Nico paused to let that sink in. And if Alcyoneus has been reborn in Alaska...
Then he can't be defeated there, Hazel finished. Ever. By any means. Which is why our 1980s expedition was doomed to fail.
Another round of arguing and shouting broke out.
The quest is impossible, shouted a senator. We're doomed, cried a ghost.
More Kool-Aid, yelled Dakota.
Silence, Raina called. Senators, we must act like Romans. Mars has given us this quest, and we have to believe it is possible. These three demigods must travel to Alaska. They must free Thanatos and return before the Feast of Fortuna. If they can retrieve the lost eagle in the process, so much the better. All we can do is advise them and make sure they have a plan.
Raina looked at Percy without much hope.
You do have a plan?
Percy wanted to step forward bravely and say,
No, I don't.
That was the truth, but looking around at all the nervous faces, Percy knew he couldn't say it.
First, I need to understand something. He turned toward Nico. I thought Pluto was the god of the dead. Now I hear about this other guy, Thanatos, and the doors of death from that prophecy. The prophecy of seven. What does all that mean?
Nico took a deep breath. Okay, Pluto is the god of the underworld, but the actual god of death, the one who's responsible for making sure souls go to the afterlife and stay there, that's Pluto's lieutenant, Thanatos. He's like... Well, imagine life and death are two different countries. Everybody would like to be in life, right? So there's a guarded border to keep people from crossing back over without permission. But it's a big border, with lots of holes in the fence. Pluto tries to seal up the breaches, but new ones keep popping up all the time. That's why he depends on Thanatos, who's like the border patrol, the police. Thanatos catches souls, Percy said, and deports them back to the underworld.
Exactly, Nico said, but now Thanatos has been captured, chained up.
Frank raised his hand.
How do you chain death?
It's been done before, Nico said. In the old days, a guy named Sisyphus tricked death and tied him up. Another time,
Hercules wrestled him to the ground.
And now a giant has captured him, Percy said. So if we could free Thanatos, then the dead would stay dead?
He glanced at Gwen. No offense.
It's more complicated than that, Nico said.
Octavian rolled his eyes.
Why does that not surprise me?
You mean the doors of death, Reyna said, ignoring Octavian. They are mentioned in the Prophecy of Seven, which sent the first expedition to Alaska. Cato the ghost snorted.
We all know how that turned out. We Larrys remember.
The other ghosts grumbled in agreement. Nico put his finger to his lips. Suddenly all the Larrys went silent. Some looked alarmed, like their mouths had been glued together. Percy wished he had that power over certain living people, like Octavian, for instance.
Thanatos is only part of the solution, Nico explained. The doors of death. Well, that's a concept even I don't completely understand. There are many ways into the underworld. The River Styx, the Door of Orpheus, plus smaller escape routes that open up from time to time. With Thanatos imprisoned, all those exits will be easier to use. Sometimes it might work to our advantage and let a friendly soul come back, like Gwen here. More often, it will benefit evil souls and monsters, the sneaky ones who are looking to escape. Now the doors of death, those are the personal doors of Thanatos. His fast lane between life and death. Only Thanatos is supposed to know where they are, and the location shifts over the ages. If I understand correctly, the doors of death have been forced open. Gia's minions have seized control of them.
Which means Gia controls who can come back from the dead, Percy guessed.
Nico nodded.
She can pick and choose who to let out. The worst monsters. The most evil souls. If we rescue Thanatos, that means at least he can catch souls again and send them below.
Monsters will die when we kill them, like they used to, and we'll get a little breathing room. But unless we're able to retake the doors of death, our enemies won't stay down for long. They'll have an easy way back to the world of the living.
So we can catch them and deport them, Percy summed up. But they'll just keep coming back across.
In a depressing nutshell.
Yes, Nico said. Frank scratched his head.
But Thanatos knows where the doors are, right? If we free him, he can retake them.
I don't think so, Nico said. Not alone. He's no match for Gia. That would take a massive quest. An army of the best demigods.
Foes bear arms to the doors of death, Reyna said. That's the Prophecy of Seven.
She looked at Percy, and for just a moment he could see how scared she was. She did a good job of hiding it, but Percy wondered if she'd had nightmares about Gia too. If she'd seen visions of what would happen when the camp was invaded by monsters that couldn't be killed.
If this begins the ancient prophecy, we don't have resources to send an army to these doors of death and protect the camp. I can't imagine even sparing seven demigods.
First things first.
Percy tried to sound confident, though he could feel the level of panic rising in the room.
I don't know who the seven are, or what that old prophecy means exactly, but first we have to free Thanatos. Mars told us we only needed three people for the quest to Alaska. Let's concentrate on succeeding with that and getting back before the Feast of Fortuna. Then we can worry about the doors of death.
Yeah, Frank said in a small voice. That's probably enough for 1 week.
So you do have a plan?
Octavian asked skeptically. Percy looked at his teammates.
We go to Alaska as fast as possible.
And we improvise, Hazel said.
A lot. Frank added.
Reyna studied them. She looked like she was mentally writing her own obituary.
Very well, she said. Nothing remains except for us to vote what support we can give the quest. Transportation, money, magic, weapons.
Praetor, if I may,
Octavian said.
Oh, great, Percy muttered. Here it comes.
The camp is in grave danger, Octavian said. Two gods have warned us we will be attacked 4 days from now. We must not spread our resources too thin, especially by funding projects that have a slim chance of success.
Octavian looked at the three of them with pity, as if to say, poor little things.
Mars has clearly chosen the least likely candidates for this quest. Perhaps that is because he considers them the most expendable. Perhaps Mars is playing the long odds. Whatever the case, he wisely didn't order a massive expedition, nor did he ask us to fund their adventure. I say we keep our resources here and defend the camp. This is where the battle will be lost or won. If these three succeed, wonderful, but they should do so by their own ingenuity.
An uneasy murmur passed through the crowd. Frank jumped to his feet. Before he could start a fight, Percy said,
Fine, no problem. But at least give us transportation. Gia is the Earth goddess, right? Going overland, across the Earth. I'm guessing we should avoid that. Plus, it'll be too slow.
Octavian laughed.
Would you like us to charter you an airplane?
The idea made Percy nauseous.
No. Air travel. I have a feeling that would be bad, too. But a boat? Can you at least give us a boat?
Hazel made a grunting sound. Percy glanced over. She shook her head and mouthed, Fine. I'm fine.
A boat?
Octavian turned to the senators.
The son of Neptune wants a boat. Sea travel has never been the Roman way, but he isn't much of a Roman.
Octavian, Rhaena said sternly, a boat is little enough to ask, and providing no other aid seems very...
Traditional, Octavian exclaimed. It is very traditional. Let us see if these questers have the strength to survive without help, like true Romans.
More muttering filled the chamber. The senator's eyes moved back and forth between Octavian and Rhaena, watching the test of wills. Rhaena straightened in her chair.
Very well, she said tightly. We'll put it to a vote. Senators, the motion is as follows. The quest shall go to Alaska. The Senate shall provide full access to the Roman Navy docked at Alameda. No other aid will be forthcoming. The three adventurers will survive or fail on their own merits. All in favor?
Every senator's hand went up.
The motion is passed.
Rhaena turned to Frank.
Centurion, your party is excused. The Senate has other matters to discuss. And Octavian, if I may confer with you for a moment.
Percy was incredibly glad to see the sunlight. In that dark hall, with all those eyes on him, he'd felt like the world was riding on his shoulders, and he was fairly sure he'd had that experience before. He filled his lungs with fresh air. Hazel picked up a large emerald from the path and slipped it in her pocket.
So, we're pretty much toast?
Frank nodded miserably.
If either of you wants to back out, I wouldn't blame you.
Are you kidding? Hazel said. And pull sentry duty for the rest of the week?
Frank managed to smile. He turned to Percy. Percy gazed across the forum.
Stay put,
Annabeth had said in his dream.
But if he stayed put, this camp would be destroyed.
He looked up at the hills and imagined Gia's face smiling in the shadows and ridges.
You can't win, little demigod, she seemed to say.
Serve me by staying, or serve me by going.
Percy made a silent vow. After the Feast of Fortuna, he would find Annabeth. But for now, he had to act. He couldn't let Gia win.
I'm with you, he told Frank. Besides, I want to check out the Roman Navy.
They were only halfway across the forum when someone called,
Jackson!
Percy turned and saw Octavian jogging toward them.
What do you want? Percy asked.
Octavian smiled.
Already decided I'm your enemy? That's a rash choice, Percy. I'm a loyal Roman.
Frank snarled.
You're backstabbing, slimy.
Both Percy and Hazel had to restrain him.
Oh, dear, Octavian said. Hardly the right behavior for a new centurion. Jackson, I only followed you because Reyna charged me with a message. She wants you to report to the Principia without your, two lackeys here. Reyna will meet you there after the Senate adjourns. She'd like a private word with you before you leave on your quest.
What about? Percy said.
I'm sure I don't know. Octavian smiled wickedly. The last person she had a private talk with was Jason Grace, and that was the last time I ever saw him. Good luck and goodbye, Percy Jackson.
Chapter 15. Percy. Percy was glad Riptide had returned to his pocket. Judging from Reyna's expression, he thought he might need to defend himself. She stormed into the Principia with her purple cloak billowing and her greyhounds at her feet. Percy was sitting in one of the praetor chairs that he'd pulled to the visitor's side, which maybe wasn't the proper thing to do. He started to get up.
"Stay seated," Reyna growled. "You leave after lunch. We have a lot to discuss."
She plunked down her dagger so hard the jelly bean bowl rattled. Aurum and Argentum took their posts on her left and right and fixed their ruby eyes on Percy.
"What I do wrong?" Percy asked.
"If it's about the chair..."
"It's not you,"
Reyna scowled. "I hate Senate meetings. When Octavian gets talking..."
Percy nodded.
"You're a warrior. Octavian is a talker. Put him in front of the Senate and suddenly he becomes the powerful one."
She narrowed her eyes.
"You're smarter than you look."
"Gee, thanks. I hear Octavian might get elected praetor, assuming the camp survives that long."
"Which brings us to the subject of Doomsday," Reyna said, "and how you might help prevent it. But before I place the fate of Camp Jupiter in your hands, we need to get a few things straight."
She sat down and put a ring on the table, a band of silver etched with a sword and torch design, like Reyna's tattoo.
"Do you know what this is?"
"The sign of your mom," Percy said. "The, war goddess."
He tried to remember the name, but he didn't want to get it wrong. Something like Bologna or Salami?
"Bologna, yes."
Reyna scrutinized him carefully.
"You don't remember where you saw this ring before? You really don't remember me or my sister Hilla?"
Percy shook his head.
"I'm sorry."
"It would have been 4 years ago."
"Just before you came to camp."
Reyna frowned.
"How did you..."
"You got 4 stripes on your tattoo. 4 years."
Reyna looked at her forearm.
"Of course. It seems so long ago. I suppose you wouldn't recall me even if you had your memory. I was just a little girl, one attendant among so many at the spa. But you spoke with my sister just before you and that other one, Annabeth, destroyed our home."
Percy tried to remember. He really did. For some reason, Annabeth and he had visited a spa and decided to destroy it. He couldn't imagine why. Maybe they hadn't liked the deep tissue massage. Maybe they'd gotten bad manicures.
"It's a blank," he said. "Since your dogs aren't attacking me, I hope you'll believe me. I'm telling the truth."
Aurum and Argentum snarled. Percy got the feeling they were thinking, "Please lie. Please lie." Reyna tapped the silver ring.
"I believe you're sincere," she said, "but not everyone at camp does. Octavian thinks you're a spy. He thinks you were sent here by Gia to find our weaknesses and distract us. He believes the old legends about the Greeks."
"Old legends?"
Reyna's hand rested halfway between her dagger and the jelly beans. Percy had a feeling that if she made a sudden move, she wouldn't be grabbing for the candy.
"Some believe Greek demigods still exist," she said. "Heroes who follow the older forms of the gods. There are legends of battles between Roman and Greek heroes in relatively modern times. The American Civil War, for instance. I have no proof of this, and if our Lares know anything, they refuse to say. But Octavian believes the Greeks are still around, plotting our downfall, working with the forces of Gia. He thinks you are one of them."
Is that what you believe?
I believe you came from somewhere, she said. You're important and dangerous. Two gods have taken a special interest in you since you arrived, so I can't believe you'd work against Olympus or Rome.
She shrugged.
Of course, I could be wrong. Perhaps the gods sent you here to test my judgment. But I think you were sent here to make up for the loss of Jason.
Jason. Percy couldn't go very far in this camp without hearing that name.
The way you talk about him, Percy said. Were you two a couple?
Raina's eyes bored into him, like the eyes of a hungry wolf. Percy had seen enough hungry wolves to know.
We might have been, Raina said, given time. Praetors work closely together. It's common for them to become romantically involved. But Jason was only praetor for a few months before he disappeared. Ever since then, Octavian has been pestering me, agitating for new elections. I've resisted. I need a partner in power. But I'd prefer someone like Jason, a warrior, not a schemer.
She waited. Percy realized she was sending him a silent invitation. His throat went dry.
Oh, you mean... Oh.
I believe the gods sent you to help me, Raina said. I don't understand where you come from any more than I understood it 4 years ago. But I think your arrival is some sort of repayment. You destroyed my home once. Now you've been sent to save my home. I don't hold a grudge against you for the past, Percy. My sister hates you still, it's true. But fate brought me here to Camp Jupiter. I've done well. All I ask is that you work with me for the future. I intend to save this camp.
The metal dogs glared at him, their mouths frozen in snarl mode. Percy found Raina's eyes a lot harder to meet.
Look, I'll help, he promised. But I'm new here. You've got a lot of good people who know this camp better than I do. If we succeed on this quest, Hazel and Frank will be heroes. You could ask one of them.
Please, Raina said. No one will follow a child of Pluto. There's something about that girl. Rumors about where she came from.
No, she won't do. As for Frank Jong, he has a good heart, but he's hopelessly naive and inexperienced. Besides, if the others found out about his family history at this camp...
Family history?
The point is, Percy, you are the real power on this quest. You are a seasoned veteran. I've seen what you can do. A son of Neptune wouldn't be my first choice, but if you return successfully from this mission, the Legion might be saved. The praetorship will be yours for the taking. Together you and I could expand the power of Rome. We could raise an army and find the doors of death, crush Gia's forces once and for all. You would find me a very helpful friend.
She said that word like it could have several meanings, and he could pick which one. Percy's feet started tapping on the floor, anxious to run.
Raina, I'm honored and all. Seriously, but I've got a girlfriend and I don't want power or a praetorship.
Percy was afraid he'd make her mad. Instead, she just raised her eyebrows.
A man who turns down power? She said.
That's not very Roman of you.
Just think about it. In 4 days I have to make a choice. If we are to fight off an invasion, we must have two strong praetors. I'd prefer you, but if you fail on your quest or don't come back, or refuse my offer, well, I'll work with Octavian. I mean to save this camp, Percy Jackson. Things are worse than you realize.
Percy remembered what Frank said about the monster attacks getting more frequent.
How bad?
Raina's nails dug into the table.
Even the Senate doesn't know the whole truth. I've asked Octavia not to share his auguries, or we'd have mass panic. He's seen a great army marching south. More than we can possibly defeat. They're led by a giant.
Alcyoneus?
I don't think so. If he is truly invulnerable in Alaska, he'd be foolish to come here himself. It must be one of his brothers.
Great, Percy said. So we've got two giants to worry about.
The Praetor nodded. Lupa and her wolves are trying to slow them down, but this force is too strong even for them. The enemy will be here soon, by the Feast of Fortuna, at the very latest.
Percy shuddered. He'd seen Lupa in action. He knew all about the wolf goddess and her pack.
If this enemy was too powerful for Lupa, Camp Jupiter didn't stand a chance.
Reyna read his expression.
Yes, it's bad, but not hopeless. If you succeed in bringing back our eagle, if you release death so we can actually kill our enemies, then we stand a chance. And there's one more possibility.
Reyna slid the silver ring across the table.
I can't give you much help, but your journey will take you close to Seattle. I'm asking you for a favor, which may also help you. Find my sister Hilla.
Your sister? The one who hates me?
Oh, yes, Reyna agreed. She would love to kill you. But show her that ring as a token from me, and she may help you instead.
May.
I can't speak for her. In fact...
Reyna frowned.
In fact, I haven't spoken to her in weeks. She's gone silent, with these armies passing through.
You want me to check on her? Percy guessed. Make sure she's okay.
Partially, yes. I can't imagine she's been overcome. My sister has a powerful force. Her territory is well defended. But if you can find her, she could offer you valuable help. It could mean the difference between success and failure on your quest. And if you tell her what's happening here...
She might send help? Percy asked.
Reyna didn't answer, but Percy could see the desperation in her eyes. She was terrified, grasping for anything that could save her camp. No wonder she wanted Percy's help. She was the only Praetor. The defense of the camp rested on her shoulders alone.
Percy took the ring.
I'll find her. Where do I look? What kind of force does she have?
Don't worry. Just go to Seattle. They'll find you.
That didn't sound encouraging, but Percy slipped the ring onto his leather necklace with his beads and his probatio tablet.
Wish me luck.
Fight well, Percy Jackson, Reyna said. And thank you.
He could tell the audience was over. Reyna was having trouble holding herself together, keeping up the image of the confident commander. She needed some time by herself. But at the door of the Principia, Percy couldn't resist turning.
How did we destroy your home? That spa where you lived?
The metal greyhounds growled. Reyna snapped her fingers to silence them.
You destroyed the power of our mistress, she said. You freed some prisoners who took revenge on all of us who lived on the island. My sister and I, well, we survived. It was difficult, but in the long run I think we are better off away from that place.
Still, I'm sorry, Percy said. If I hurt you, I'm sorry.
Reyna gazed at him for a long time as if trying to translate his words.
An apology?
Not very Roman at all, Percy Jackson.
You'd make an interesting Praetor. I hope you'll think about my offer.
Chapter 16 Percy Lunch felt like a funeral party. Everybody ate. People talked in hushed tones. Nobody seemed particularly happy. The other campers kept glancing over at Percy like he was the corpse of honor. Reyna made a brief speech wishing them luck. Octavian ripped open a beanie baby and pronounced grave omens and hard times ahead, but predicted the camp would be saved by an unexpected hero, whose initials were probably O-C-T-A-V-I-A-N. Then the other campers went off to their afternoon classes, gladiator fighting, Latin lessons, paintball with ghosts, eagle training, and a dozen other activities that sounded better than a suicide quest. Percy followed Hazel and Frank to the barracks to pack. Percy didn't have much. He'd cleaned up his backpack from his trip south and had kept most of his bargain mart supplies. He had a fresh pair of jeans and an extra purple t-shirt from the camp quartermaster, plus some nectar, ambrosia, snacks, and a little mortal money and camping supplies.
At lunch, Reyna had handed him a scroll of introduction from the Praetor and Camp Senate. Supposedly, any retired legionnaires they met on the trip would help them if shown the letter. He also kept his leather necklace with the beads, the silver ring, and the probatio tablet. And of course, he had Riptide in his pocket. He folded his tattered orange T-shirt and left it on his bunk.
"I'll be back," he said.
He felt pretty stupid talking to a T-shirt, but he was really thinking of Annabeth and his old life.
"I'm not leaving for good, but I have to help these guys. They took me in. They deserve to survive."
The T-shirt didn't answer, thankfully. One of their roommates, Bobby, gave them a ride to the border of the valley on Hannibal the Elephant. From the hilltops, Percy could see everything below. The little Tiber snaked across golden pastures where the unicorns were grazing. The temples and forums of New Rome gleamed in the sunlight. On the field of Mars, engineers were hard at work, pulling down the remains of last night's fort and setting up barricades for a game of death ball. A normal day for Camp Jupiter, but on the northern horizon, storm clouds were gathering. Shadows moved across the hills, and Percy imagined the face of Gia getting closer and closer.
"Work with me for the future," Reyna had said. "I intend to save this camp."
Looking down at the valley, Percy understood why she cared so much. Even though he was new to Camp Jupiter, he felt a fierce desire to protect this place. A safe haven where demigods could build their lives. He wanted that to be part of his future. Maybe not the way Reyna imagined, but if he could share this place with Annabeth. They got off the elephant. Bobby wished them a safe journey. Hannibal wrapped the three questers with his trunk. Then the elephant taxi service headed back into the valley. Percy sighed. He turned to Hazel and Frank and tried to think of something upbeat to say. A familiar voice said,
"IDs, please."
A statue of Terminus appeared at the summit of the hill. The god's marble face frowned irritably.
"Well, come along."
"You again?" Percy asked. "I thought you just guarded the city."
Terminus huffed.
"Glad to see you too, Mr. Rule Flouter. Normally, yes, I guard the city. But for international departures, I like to provide extra security at the camp borders. You really should have allowed 2 hours before your planned departure time, you know. But we'll have to make do. Now, come over here so I can pat you down."
"But you don't have..."
Percy stopped himself.
Sure.
He stood next to the armless statue. Terminus conducted a rigorous mental pat-down.
"You seem to be clean," Terminus decided. "Do you have anything to declare?"
"Yes," Percy said. "I declare this is stupid."
"Huh. Probatio tablet. Percy Jackson, 5th cohort. Son of Neptune. Fine. Go. Hazel Levesque, daughter of Pluto. Fine. Any foreign currency or... precious metals to declare?"
"No," she muttered.
"Are you sure?" Terminus asked. "Because last time..."
"No."
"Well, this is a grumpy bunch," said the god. "Quest travelers, always in a rush. Now, let's see. Frank Jong. Ah, Centurion. Well done, Frank. And that haircut is regulation perfect. I approve. Off you go then, Centurion Jong. Do you need any directions today?"
"No. No, I guess not."
"Just down to the BART station," Terminus said anyway. "Change trains at 12th Street in Oakland. You want Fruitvale Station. From there, you can walk or take the bus to Alameda."
"You guys don't have a magical BART train or something?" Percy asked.
"Magic trains," Terminus scoffed. "You'll be wanting your own security lane and a pass to the executive lounge next. Just travel safely and watch out for Polybetes." "Talk about scofflaws. Bah! I wish I could throttle him with my bare hands."
"Wait, who?" Percy asked.
Terminus made a straining expression like he was flexing his non-existent biceps.
"Ah, well. Just be careful of him. I imagine he can smell the son of Neptune a mile away. Out you go now. Good luck."
an invisible force kicked them across the boundary. When Percy looked back, Terminus was gone. In fact, the entire valley was gone.